Hello, and welcome back to the Rights and Wrongs podcast. Today is something different than a traditional episode, in which I will be talking about issues not directly related in politics. This is the first of many segments, which will be called Sidebars, in which I will talk to guests on a wider range of subjects, from anything from building a business or any other issues that come to mind. Today, I am joined by an old buddy of mine, Irving Gallardo. I think that's the first time in my life I've ever said his last name, so usually I call him G. I'm gonna let him introduce himself. Do you want to go, G?
Yeah, absolutely. How's everyone doing? My name is Irving Gallardo. I met Sergeant, well, at the time, right, you were the sergeant. I met Oaks. I call him Oaky. Oaks always been a good friend. A little bit about myself. When I was 17, I joined the Marine Corps. I was young. I knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted to become a Marine. And by the time I graduated boot camp, I was still 17. I went open contract just because I just wanted to be a Marine. I didn't matter what it was. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm a Marine.
But yeah, the reason I asked G to join me on this is that he is much more than a Marine. Like, he's a good guy, good father.
Yeah, I am. I am a father of three. You're right, George. Thanks for bigging me up. There's a couple things, you know, it's just I have so much stuff in my head that it just passes me. But yeah, I appreciate that, folks. Thank you.
No problem. Also, what I would not even call, like, most people probably label you as like a venture capitalist, but I kind of think of you more of a venture entrepreneur. You see an opportunity and you just kind of go for it and you attack it probably the way that we've always gone. And that's the reason I wanted to invite you onto this podcast, which ironically, this podcast is about if you want to get into a project or start a job, all the technical difficulties and other stuff that happened. And the entire time for the last 30 minutes, I want to say 40 minutes, we've been dealing with nothing but technical difficulties, dealing with the IT aspect. Communication.
Listen, it's a lot of prepping. It's a lot of prepping. I remember when I came back from my deployment back in 2015, I told myself, I'm going to incorporate in New York City. I'm going to start this low voltage fire alarm business. And I read a lot. It's kind of like boot camp. You know, you read your ELOs, your TLOs, and you plan for it and you make mission. Once you set up your basics, your DUNS number, your CAGE code, you get a tax ID, you build up your clientele and you work on your pitch, and that's your life. That becomes your baby. You take care of your baby and your baby takes care of you. And it's never going to be perfect. I've failed a lot in my business. There's contracts that I didn't finish in time because of other things that were unforeseen. For example, like the coronavirus, and the state of New York understood what was happening with the coronavirus. So a lot of the contracts that were supposed to be done by April, it was extended. So you work around those things and you stay positive and you stay motivated. I spoke to a buddy of mine yesterday. I've been traveling these past few days from New York City and I'm on my way to Mexico. It's my final destination. And along the way, excuse me?
Yeah, you're like in the northern states right now, like what we usually call the flyover states, aren't you?
Yes, I sure am. And I passed through Detroit and I ended up meeting up with another Marine fellow buddy of mine, best friend. We met at the schoolhouse, 2010. And our class was always the best class. We were very competitive. You're a beast as well, Oaky.
Yeah. If people don't know what a beast is, it's not just be like, we're monsters. Like, I am nowhere near as like muscular as G, another one. Beast
stands for
basic. Engineer Equipment Electrical Systems Technician, or BEEST, so they call us beasts just because it's easier. Basically, it's really confusing, and it's one of the reasons that I find it funny without my – and I'm sure you feel the same way about our time in the Marine Corps – is the Marines, every man's a rifleman, so it's like you're supposed to be infantry, and like you're supposed to fight, but to be infantry, you're supposed to just take orders and listen to them. But then as an electrical engineer, where they try and cram 4 years of electrical engineering school into like, what, 3 months? They're like, and then they're like, and they're basically, we're going to teach you everything about electrical theory if there's ever a piece of equipment there isn't a technician for, you're going to fix it. Usually we're called GenMex, so we work for generators a lot.
GenMex, correct.
But you have a lot of out-of-the-box thinking, and it's a really weird place to be in the Marine Corps because you could be a Lance Corporal, be the only person on a FOB or on a base that understands the electrical theory, and you're sitting there listening to a lieutenant going, yes, sir, no, sir, trying to explain to a master sergeant why we can't do something because physics doesn't let you. So it's like, it's, it puts you in a really, like, literally a rock and a hard place half the time with the chain of command. Because
it sure does. It sure does. It sure does. There's a lot of politics behind that aspect. The thing about the Marine Corps really did, it did establish certain ethics within me. And I just knew that the Marine Corps, it opened up my eyes to see how, because it is a corporation, right? The Marine Corps is a corporation, essentially. And I try to run my business how I would go with my day to days when I would be in a unit and I was given a mission. I try to make my missions. And a lot of it is, you really have to have a vision. You need to plan your days. Like today, I want to do, if you're opening up your business, you want to make sure that you're doing your paperwork. And every day you have to meet your deadlines. Every day.
And that's
every day, every day.
And it is strange. Like, I feel like everyone will say, like, if you have in the military, like, the military does give you a lot of, like, people be like, it gives you discipline, it gives you work ethic and stuff like that. I think one thing the military, there's two major things when you're, like, running projects like I'm doing now or, like, throughout my, like, actual career working in security and working in the VA. The Marine Corps did something that taught me a really good lesson, and that is just because it's someone's job to do something, i.e. be a cook or be a mechanic, get your pay on time, just because it's someone's job doesn't mean they're reliable at their job. There's some people that are really good at their jobs, but there's some people that are, the military told you that this, you're going to be a supply person. They might not be good at logistics whatsoever. Like, they're just horrible at it. So you have to become, like, self-reliant in many ways.
Yeah, and, like, every unit is different. Every unit deals with different military personnel, and we all have our individualities in a sense, and we all know how to do certain things differently. And I was actually speaking to this with Lau yesterday about how when we first got to the unit, we were pretty much, it's not what we wanted, because Lau and I wanted to deploy immediately after the schoolhouse. We wanted to hit the fleet and we wanted to go. But we ended up getting stuck in a non-deployable unit for 4 years, which is great. It was a fourth echelon shop, meaning we broke down the generators to the skid base. So Lyle and I, we would work every day side by side and doing PMs on generators, troubleshooting, operating forklifts, lifts, staging the gear, taking it to the wash rack. And it was only like 10 of us, right? And there were certain times where other units or Marines would try to snatch us up to do working parties.
So make for it people happen, that aren't mechanics or in the military, what he means by fourth echelon, it means, so I was in a 2.5 echelon shop, meaning, so different echelons of what you're allowed to do in maintenance. So being as 2.5 is like, I'm allowed to do basically what a Jiffy Lube could do, if you're thinking of in car terms, but I could do a little bit more. Like I could mess around with like head spacing and stuff like that, and like take the header off. Like there's certain head gaskets that I'm looking for. Like I could do that, but like that was the limit of what I was legally allowed to do on the equipment. Him being a fourth echelon, I don't think there's like anything you couldn't do besides design a new piece of equipment.
Yeah, pretty much. After the fourth echelon shop, you just pretty much thermo the gear, get rid of it. That's where we were ended up at. And yeah, after, you know.
It's something I sometimes forget. Like, I remember a lot, like, the military is what made me. Because, like, one, it paid for my undergrad. It paid for part of my master's program.
It's the reason why you're in Scotland right now.
Yeah. I'm like, there's a lot of different parts of it. But it is interesting, too. because of the position I was put in while I was in the military, I learned when I picked up sergeant is I'm not a good leader of men. And like that was a good thing that I learned from the military. Like I'm not the kind of guy that you want to like charge a field. Like when you give me like a lot of like military human resources or military movement and like logistics, I'm not good at that. Yelling at someone to go do something and like doing like it. Because most of the time I was told you're going to maintain these equipment. I was in a Marine Wing Support Squadron. No one knows that. The units usually like to call us candy shops because there isn't a MOS outside of infantry or like specific combat roles that we don't have. I think there's like 130 different jobs in an MWSS. So we have electrical engineers, we have tarp guys, fuelers, armorers, we have motor team, like you name it, we got it. So they call us candy shops because we deploy units come in and they are short on MOSs. They come to us because like I want two of those, three of these, like and they just kind of like you become a number. But you do a lot of cross training. And I got my leadership role, and you remember me when I was a sergeant when I first got there. Like I'm not used to leading people outside of a mechanic shop. Like you give me like, I'm used to like, okay, you're a mechanic. I know you can do this. You go over there and do it. I don't have to babysit you. And then you get into like reserves is a total different game. Great Marines under you, but like they don't have the time or experience to work on the equipment. So you can't leave most of them alone, if you remember. Like
the reserves is a whole different animal.
Yeah.
It really is. However, when I dropped the reserves, that was when I deployed.
Yeah.
You know, so luckily I was able. What's up?
No, I was not saying, like, I'm not insulting the Marine Corps reserves in any way. Just like, it's if you're like you and I that came from active side, it's a different culture.
Yeah, it's a whole different mentality.
It was a good experience. Like, at least I think it was. Like, I got to meet you. I got to meet a few other buddies that I still stay in contact with.
Yeah, you lead by example. You listen, I'm telling you, when I got to CISCOM, it was, you know, certain things had I set the tone. I set the tone, and you would hear it like, oh, he's active duty, you know. It hit you with the, this is the reserves. It's not the active duty. We're a little different here. We don't do that.
So that was actually one thing I really did want to go over the podcast for this episode was it's almost trying to look at the background. What everyone that looks at it, like when you look at the stream and like people look at the regular ones, it would be like episode one's an immigration roundtable. The second one was on environmental rights. The one I just recorded yesterday, we were talking about feminism theory because people like we're trying to have to talk about like how people hear feminism. They're like, oh, feminism is like the equal rights movement on that side, but it's actually a full theory of international relations. This is the first podcast you're listening to. One, this isn't a traditional platform, but like system that we're doing, but it's a platform on rights, such as like civil rights, human rights, privileges, such as legal privileges versus societal privileges and misconceptions with them. Because a lot of people, this is like one thing I was trying to focus on, that the feminism one, I'm going to be working with one on police issues, where people throw around a lot of buzzwords. And I feel like that's a huge word issue because you see it with military time, or, you know, like people like you see it a lot of times in like firearm politics, other politics, where someone will get this word and they have like a minor understanding of what a word is, like feminism.
Yeah.
Then they'll see it and they're like, this is what it is. Like another prime example is like neoliberalism. People hear neoliberalism like, oh, it's new. Neo means new and liberalism. Well, I know what a liberalism, but it's just another word for capitalism. It's a specific form of capitalism, but people like to throw words around.
That's
what the podcast is about. But I actually used the feminist theory of interviewing.
Yeah.
Where it's like kind of open on this, where I've asked you a question, I'm not going to correct you. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, especially like doing job interviews and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or doing a lot of people don't know how to craft a question. People know how to demand an answer. They don't know how to craft a question.
It's hard. It is a difficult thing to have a conversation flow just naturally, especially if you're doing a podcast, because there's just certain times where you're just like, all right, you get the conversation going and it kind of gets quiet and it's like, all right, you need to have that. It's a knit. Not everybody can do that. It's not an easy ability that you acquire. I mean, some people are born with this. Some people can do it, but I don't know. To me, I feel like I'm one of those individuals that I need to work at it every day. You need to practice, right? What was the thing with Allen Iverson? What they were saying, do you practice? And it's like, of course, you gotta practice. Nobody sees you practicing. Nobody sees the hard work that you're doing behind closed doors, right? But that's what it takes. You gotta sharpen up your skills.
Oh, so the one thing I was gonna add to that is you also have to be aware that you were wrong. And like, I feel like that's a really good part when it comes to like practicing and like political or asking questions, is that that's the reason I say people demand answers, because some people want to ask a question and they already mapped your answer. Because like most of them, when you ask someone a question, you think you know how they're going to answer the question. But when they don't fulfill like your expectations, you're like, you don't understand the question. It's like, no, they did. They just threw you a curveball.
Yeah. It's almost as if people don't want to hear what you have to say. People want to hear what you're thinking coming out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And that's business. That's business as well, because I can't tell you how many times where I've discussed a vision, that my vision in my head and the way I'm trying to describe it, others may be able to visualize it differently. So part of that is having the conversations, and a lot of the business that I've done and the reason why I am where I am is because I've had conversations like this with between you and I, or my partners, or my clients, peers. I like to operate the same way you're kind of operating your podcast. I put out a question out there and I want to see what people know. Because ultimately, I've came to realize when I would do job interviews, because I was looking for a project manager that was specifically skilled in the electrical trade. And I realized just by holding a few interviews, and I've never held any, a lot of the stuff that I'm doing right now, it's kind of like, you know, you're going to boot camp with the Marines. A lot of it is new. We're kind of winging it. We're kind of just seeing what everybody else is doing, and we're following. You don't change the system. You kind of go with it. And if you can improve certain things along the way and tweak them to what you feel could or is ideal, then that's what you do. But yeah, you have to admit that you're wrong sometimes. A lot of times I was right in certain things, but I was wrong because I just didn't think about that, or I should have listened to my coworkers or my peers. And it's just a matter of how we're going to handle a situation. At the end of the day, you can say, oh, I would have done it this way, but at least it got done, right? Business is all about making, you're in the business to make money. As long as you're making money, you're fine, and you're making mission. That's all that really matters. It becomes a huge problem, and this is when you know you're wrong, when you go from green to red. You don't want to be in the red in business. You want to have that cash flow. You want to be green at all times. And that's why I say you need to plan every day, because these days that you're doing your little task, whether it's three things that you did, whether they're small or major, those little things become big things throughout your years. And that's gonna kind of give you an idea of where you're gonna land in 5 years.
It is true, when you're doing business, you need to stay out of the red. Because like, you can't survive, especially in a unforgiving, volatile, but very opportunistic economy such as the United States. It's a very volatile, there are no safety nets for you in the US.
There are no safety nets.
But the other problem is there are ethical things too, because it's really interesting when you talk to a lot of business people, is like, you're being realistic and like, you know, it's like, you just don't want to be in the red. You want to be in the green. And then you look at other people like Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, where he's never going to be in the red. He's just always trying to push for more green.
You're right. Jeff Bezos, he's never going to. However, there are companies right now that are in the red. Like, they haven't even made a dollar.
Elon Musk, yeah. Like, he's always risky.
Elon Musk, you're correct. And it's the market, the capitalism, right?
Yeah. No, that's the thing. You can't judge millionaires. Like, that's when I'm not going to get mad at a millionaire. It's just when people are making cuts, and it's like, you literally can afford, like, you're not going to get hurt if you don't make a cut. Like, Elon Musk, I understand when he makes cuts, because like, that guy is gambling small fortunes of like nations, but pushing forward, but he could collapse at any moment. But there's other guys that.
The way I see it like a server. I see it like a server or a satellite that's handling a lot of data. and just doing a lot of work. And it's like, I remember I was in Bahrain and I set up the Jennies and Gonzo set up the satellites and the comms, and we were up. And there was like a period of time where it was just cloudy. It was cloudy. We weren't gonna connect to the freaking Hawk. It was just not happening. So
the Hawk's the
the bird in the sky. Yeah. And
so a lot of my viewers aren't military, so like certain terms you have to be careful about.
I would describe that in layman's terms. How would you go about that, Oaks? The satellite?
Yeah, I would say the satellite. Because it's low orbit, but it's an orbit.
Yeah.
that's the thing where a lot of people might not understand, especially like military terms. A lot of the stuff we use, especially Marine Corps stuff, when me and him are talking about things, there is no such thing as a permanent structure in the Marine Corps. Like, our bases are small cities, but they're still called camps. We just don't. So everything, like, where we use like MEP equipment, where it used to be MEP equipment, it's now called AMP equipment. I don't remember, but it's like literally mobile equipment.
I think we went from MEPs to AMPs on the gears, right?
Which is confusing because AMPs is electrical.
They discontinued a lot of the Jennies that we used to have. They dermaled a lot of it. I remember in the reserve, they were just getting rid of them. Same thing with the tanks. We got rid of the tanks.
Yeah, and we're getting rid of the Humvees and the AMRAPs, but
those are all business moves that someone, is making these decisions.
Well, I understand why we're getting rid of the AMRAPs, because we're no longer, the AMRAPs were a purpose built. The military is a business. When Eisenhower warned us against the military industrial complex, he was not joking. Because certain pieces of equipment we don't really need. Humvees we need to get rid of because they're just gas guzzlers for like the size that they are, diesel guzzlers for just more efficient systems. MRAPs, yeah, we needed to keep people alive because they're not. And here's the weird thing about the military is like they want to protect us because we're America's sons. They're protecting an investment. To train you and I, they probably, for electrical engineers, they probably drop like $2 million to train each of us.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
Maybe more because you have to think about time.
Yeah.
You have to think about the experience. You have to think about the Marines before us that were training. It's just a lot. It's a lot. Then I remember we went to boot camp the first 3 days. We didn't really sleep.
But eye testing, paperwork, medical.
Yeah, everything. And imagine now during these coronavirus times. Like, you think there's a lot of money being, a lot of money out there right now.
One of my friends is a drill instructor, and they had a drop down, which people that are in the military, like, to get kicked out of boot camp, you have to be horrible at, because they're going to keep dropping you to other platoons until you graduate, because they've already invested so much money in you.
Even when they break you. I remember when they broke a few of the Marines, the drill instructors, and we got stuck doing suicide watch because their process isn't them out. That's a process in the Marine Corps. I don't think it's as easy as it is with the Army or with the Air Force.
The thing I was about to say is, like, I know people that are drill instructors. I'm not using names for obvious reasons to protect people, but like, someone came in and they had the coronavirus was hit their platoon.
Yeah.
Now the entire platoon has to go on lockdown for 2 weeks. That's 2 extra weeks worth of training. Like, that holds X amount of Marines back. That holds, like, if you just think about it, like, one, it's like, oh, sad. But, like, if you're looking at the military through, like, a logistics thing, because people complain about the military spending money all the time, and, like, some of it rightfully so. That's 2 weeks of salary for every one of those recruits, and the drill instructors, and the trainers, and the cooks, and the medical staff.
Everything. It's a lot to think about. And then the beautiful thing about it all is that you're with the Marines and you're building these relationships and you're building these memories. And at the end of the day, you realize that we're doing this for the love of the country. And yeah, the military is not perfect. Military is not perfect. It's not. I don't think any military is perfect. I don't think any business.
Some could argue having a military is not perfect. It's like the theory that you have to train people to kill other people is just, when you think about it, like in a
however, I do believe that, yeah, we are, the Marines are extremely organized. We're extremely, we pay attention to details. Yes, there is the hurry up and wait aspect to it, but what can you do? There's just certain things we have no control of. We want to, and that stuff takes time.
Yeah,
that stuff takes time. It's not perfect, but it's working. And there are certain things that, and you notice, it's just, you have to follow certain protocols.
With all your business, because you're in a lot of businesses, like I've had a few business ideas that like I contact you because you know what you're doing, because you're also part of a veteran entrepreneurship group, you're board of manager, you have your security company. I was going to ask, what are your inspirations? Like, who do you look at, whether it be like, obviously family, what are like your inspirations around?
My inspirations, honestly, what I've been having these past recent, very recent that this has been happening to me. And I appreciate it because it's letting me know that within my experience and my age, I'm able to, when I was 21, there's certain things I would have laughed at, or I would have been a little less emotionally attached to it just because of my inexperience. But now I'm a little more in tune with, I'm appreciative. And I think when I started my businesses, my inspirations was my family, my friends, my loved ones. That's what that was. I wanted to build something for everybody. That's what that was. I wanted to leave a legacy. I didn't just want to work a 9-to-5 job. I didn't. I wanted to not have a clock out, you know, because there's times I'm just looking at emails late at night and I'm planning for the weeks ahead. So I think my daughters are my inspiration as well. There's so many great people that I'm telling you, lately, there's been experiences in my past where I've relived moments, like little moments. And it's kind of telling me, like, this is what I learned from this individual. Like, for instance, I remember one time we were in formation in 29 Palms, and like one of the Marines woke up late, and I remember like one of the sergeants was like, nobody go get him. And I was like, fuck that. I'm gonna go get him. Like, yeah, it's like 115 degrees. And I remember Gunny, I love him for this, because he's like, don't ever tell any Marine not to go pick somebody up. And like, he just chewed his ass. Now that stayed in my head forever, because that's something I've always picked up. Like, you just don't leave anyone behind. Like, we're a unit. So, I mean, those are the things that inspired me, man. And when I first opened up the low voltage business, it was just another necessity that I needed to open up another business. Like, 'cause it's like, now I need to do payroll. So now I got to handle people. I gotta hire people to handle the payroll aspect of it. So I started New York Central Solutions, and that became an accounting. But the thing is, you deal with people, and their experience kind of shows you the results. So like, I'm still dealing with this accountant right now, and he's like just overworked. He's overworked. Like, when you're growing as a business and you have partners or clients or whatever it is that you're working with, you want to grow together. You don't want someone to be lacking in certain things because it's going to set you back, right? If you're making your deadlines and this person's overworked and you need certain things happening and they're not meeting you there, you're going to have to maneuver and make that work for you.
That's one thing I have to appreciate living in the UK so much is, there's something about, you don't appreciate how hardworking American people are.
Yeah.
But you also don't realize like how there are problems with the American system. Like, there's some beautiful things about it, but there's horrible things with the UK system as well. Like, there's no system that's perfect. I always live by the mantra, nothing man-made is perfect. And I also live by the mantra that there's a reason for everything, but if humans are involved, it's probably a stupid one. But
look.
Living here in the UK, they don't work as hard as we do. And like, that's like one thing. It's like, they know how to take time off. And like, it's just something that I really appreciate here. It's like, when you talk about someone like that, and I feel so bad, because people are like, oh, like, well, that's just the life of it. And I'm like, here in the UK, like, if someone's overworked and like they're stressing, like, their bosses would be like, you need to go home. You need to take time off. Because they understand it's they're not trying to squeeze blood out of a rock. They're not trying to get every little ounce of you. Yeah. They want to like get as much as they can out of you, but take care of yourself. And this is a huge thing when anyone's trying to start a project or a business, take care of yourself. If you're in an environment or a job and they're not there trying to watch out for you personally, and I'm not saying like and take advantage of the company and take all that, but like everyone's different. Like you and I both met people that some people are just solid. Like they're just solid and they can just keep working through and stuff. Don't know. Other people, they may not be as solid, but like just because they're not as solid that way doesn't mean they're not valuable. They might be better or more solid in other situations, but like you need to take care of yourself mentally. You need to take care of yourself physically. If you're in an office 10 hours a day and you're not able to go for a walk or go for a run, like, that's something like when I start a business, I need to pay attention to that. Like business hours are, you need to take care of your people because you're investing in them. Like you need to take care of your investment.
Life is about sacrifice, right? You can't do everything. It's impossible. I'm not a big believer on like multitasking. It's just hard, man. Like at first I used to believe, you could do a million things at once. And then like little by little, I just realized you can't. You just can't. And when I started the business full time, I told myself I need to sacrifice a little bit of gym time because I can't. It was the beginnings. And then little by little, you start realizing that everything falls into place. And it's just the American culture. Everything here is work, 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 work. And in Europe and other countries that I've been to, they work hard, but they also want to live their life. You know, they're happy. They're very happy over there. They like their time off. It's just a different lifestyle. So I don't really judge people. I don't really judge people with how much they want to work or how much. Because at the end of the day, there's certain states like Boston where businesses operate seasonally. You know, like I'm already at that level. I used to think like that. I used to be like, I want to work all the 24/7. You understand? Like when I first got to the schoolhouse in the Marine Corps, I was like, this is a little slow. I thought it was going to be boot camp forever in the military. Like every day we were going to be like, which it kind of was, but it kind of slows down a bit. It normalizes. So
it's a job.
I just realized
it's a job.
It's a job. With business, you got to love what you're doing. And then once you realize that you love what you love to do, the money just comes. It's like you wake up one day and literally see like $100,000 in your bank account or like $500,000 or like $1 million just because, and it happens instantly. People think that the money that they're going to get, all these millions of dollars, they're going to acquire it little by little, but that's not always the case. You know,
I think another good thing that
you can close a deal. I'm telling you, the first contract that I closed, was installing 10 flat TVs for the Army. Dude, that was like 80,000. That job was done in a week, if that. And I made sure I took my time just because I wanted to pay the men right. I wanted to make sure that they were making their hours and taxes was being paid and things of that nature. But like I said, with the profit that was left over for that company, I was able to put some money aside to purchase future equipment and materials because you need that, you know, and you want to account for your future payroll, right? If you know you're going to be hiring a project manager and they're asking for $80,000 a year, you need to have that $80,000 a year in your account set aside for that individual and so on and so forth. So.
No, it's also, you make a really good point, which people I think also need to look at. You have to know what your goals are. Some people's goals are like a lot of times the American dream or the old American dream. You want to build a house, you want a family and all this stuff, and like happiness will follow. But if you want to be a millionaire, like a lot of people still think money is going to bring happiness, and like, it's not. Like that's the one thing I've really appreciated living in Europe, and I'm sure that you saw it. People are perfectly happy living in their flat because they're like, I'm working my 9-to-5 job, I'm paying my bills, I have health insurance, I go on vacation when I want. My personal happiness, like everything I need to be taken care of is taken care of. Like they're enjoying themselves.
Be happy.
Like that's their goal. It's like, but if your goal, and some people, their goals are like, I know people like money makes them happy. They get a lot of joy when they just see the.
Listen, I love money. I'm an animal when it comes to money.
But the thing is like, if you're trying to chase money because you think money is going to bring you happiness.
Yeah, no.
They don't. That's like a huge thing I wanted to like push. The American dream is somewhat dead in the United States, but I think it's changing. And I think it's just people don't know what they want or like what makes them, like, cause my life's a lot different. Like, I'm here getting a master's and people are like, oh, you need to get a good job and get a good payment. And like, you're going to get a house and all stuff. I'm like, no, like that's your dream. My dream. Yeah, I'd be perfectly happy in an Airstream traveling the country. And as long as my bills are paid, I have food on the table and I have health insurance. That's all I like. I'm happy. It just, that's a huge thing that people have different goals. And I just want anyone that's listening, like, these are Jude's goals. And like, I'm really proud of you, man, for getting married to you, but don't measure yourself to other people or try to chase someone else's dream thinking it's going to bring you what you, what you're looking for.
Yeah. Everybody's unique, man.
But on that note, we're going to call it a night.
If anyone's ever interested and want to join questions, you can always email me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at rightsandwrong2 on Twitter. You can catch us on iHeartRadio, Podbean, Intune Radio, and these are also on YouTube. I'm going to make these podcasts with the sidebars with other guests. I'm definitely going to have G back. If anyone wants to email me questions, they're like, oh, that guy G you had, notice on. If you have to email me, I can send them to him when it goes on there. But yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, G.
I appreciate this conversation. You gave me like a million ideas just now that I need to handle by the end of the day.
Thank you again, G, for joining me on this first segment of Sidebar. I hope you, the listeners, enjoyed it, and we will have more. Have a nice night.